Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Joyce Barry and Friends, the number one worldwide radio show. The show's outrageous and it's contagious. It will lift your spirits high, you'll feel that you can fly. Transform your attitude, fill it with gratitude. Cut loose and improvise, it's coaching time today. Joyce is a great coach with an extraordinary approach. Fast on the upbeat, top of the heap. A wild motivator, great stimulator. Unstoppable in a humoristic way. Life lessons with passion, joyfully today. You want Joyce as your coach if you want this to be your best year ever.
Coach Joyce here. I want this to be your best year ever. I want this to be my best year ever. I want this to be the best year ever for Martha Rulo, her friends, her family. And we want this to be the best year ever for all our friends and family and loyal listeners worldwide.
Welcome to Joyce Barry and Friends. We are broadcasting live across America and around the world. This is the Hour to Empower, with stimulating talk, views you can use, memorable quotes, and powerful life lessons. We always have hot guests and cool topics. We even have cool guests and hot topics. You always want to tune us on, tune in, and tune up with us to hear the best of the best. You do not want to miss any of our shows. Each show goes into our archives. Log into JoyceBarryandFriends.com, Barry, B-A-R-R-I-E, and you will see each guest and each topic on our homepage. You can play and download any of our shows, always informative, inspiring, and motivational. You want to share these special shows with your friends, family, and contacts. You can follow us on Facebook and become a Joyce Barry subscriber and even a fan by going to our Joyce Barry and Friends fan page. Be sure to check like. You can follow us on Twitter. You can follow us by going to our Blog Talk Radio homepage and clicking follow right below my picture. You can also message me in any of these venues about our show, about our guests, about anything. My official website is JoyceBarry.com. Barry, B-A-R-R-I-E. The chat room is open. Log into the chat room, have fun, and chat away. I go back and forth into the chat room during the show to see what is going on in there. Motivation, inspiration, and an education. Positive, happy thoughts to improve your life, health, and finances. Take positive actions to create a gratifying lifestyle. Life lessons from me, your host, Joyce Barry, straight from the Coach's Corner. And then you will hear from our wonderful guest today. Folks, every day should be treated like a special day. We wish you the finest of friends, the opulence of opportunities, the magic of miracles, and the happiest of days. May this year be your best year ever.
Your best year ever indeed. And that means starting now. Folks, what a great show we have for you today. It is on mindfulness. How mindful are you? Martha Rulo, who was Teacher of the Year, is going to teach us about the science of mindfulness. We will learn what it is and what is the value of mindfulness to our brain, body, and cells. We will also discover why it is so valuable with enhancing personal well-being and resilience. Get inspired to cultivate more mindfulness, informally and formally. Mindfulness has come to generate so much national and international attention. Today, Martha Rulo hopes that it will now capture your attention. I welcome you to the show, Martha Rulo.
Hi, Joy. Thank you so much for letting me be a participant on your radio show. Yes, mindfulness has truly captured my heart and my passion because I've had the opportunity to see all of the benefits and the changes that it potentially can offer to all of us. So thank you.
Well, you're most welcome. You certainly know something about it. You've been a student and practitioner of mindfulness for 12 years. You've been a mindfulness presenter for over 5 years, a school educator for over 31 years. Given that package, who better to talk about mindfulness than you, Martha Rulo?
Oh, well, thank you. And Joyce, actually, I came about the practice because one of my sons had had a real serious accident and had traumatic brain injury. And at that point in time, knowing the impact on the family, I made the decision myself. This was about 14 years ago. I made the decision myself to say, what will be the best to support my family moving through all the ups and downs of experiencing this. So I started my mindfulness-based practice working with actually a teacher on the renowned program, Mindfulness-Based Stress Reduction, which is out of UMass as well as UCLA at San Diego or University of California at San Diego. So that really piqued my interest, Joyce. I saw the benefits of it, and since then I've really become a study practitioner and gotten involved with taking trainings, and I'm now a qualified teacher in the mindfulness-based stress reduction program, knowing that we can be who we want to be when we understand, first of all, the impact of stress and how we can work with our breath and our body awareness to alleviate or relax the stress experience that we're having at the time.
Well, stress is certainly prevalent in today's world. Wherever you look, wherever you turn, personally, professionally, globally, internationally, it's there. Regarding mindfulness, it has captured so much national and international attention. Why do you think that's so?
Well, I think, you know, I actually believe it's because they have done enough scientific studies, Joyce, ever since the 1970s when mindfulness-based stress reduction actually started, and it started at the Center for Mindfulness with Jon Kabat-Zinn, and he was a doctor, not a medical doctor, but had his PhD, and doctors who were medical doctors were coming to him, and they were saying, I have these people with chronic pain, and we're not able to do anything else for them. So at that point in time, John had developed an 8-week program that is very specific, very, well, strategic, but it's over time become manualized. And so now they're able to collect data that has some efficacy to it because the program is being run in the same manner. So they have done studies with people with cancer. They've done even people with eczema. It's branching out now into using mindfulness as a way to cope with addiction. There's mindfulness-based cognitive therapy for people with depression, but it really is because they have the scientific evidence now, mostly for adults, Joyce, not as much for adolescents and children, but they are gathering more. So since then, since the 70s, it was medical, and then it went into the mental health, and then around in the 1990s, a little bit after that, it started to get its way into education. And we have some famous people, such as Senator Chris Ryan, who brought it to his state and, you know, brought it forward. So, you know, there's many people that are practicing it and that are now saying, look at the benefits that this has. And one last thing, Joyce, if you don't mind, is the research has now even gotten to the cellular level where they're being able to recognize the impact of keeping the cells stronger, hardier in the division phase of the cell. So it's on all levels that we're looking at it, which is so exciting for me.
Where is the Center for Mindfulness?
So the Center for Mindfulness right now where this initiated was, it's in Amherst, Massachusetts, and it's a part of University of Massachusetts. If I'm not mistaken, it's affiliated with that at least anyway.
And why don't you tell us exactly what is mindfulness, so those of us that are not as familiar with it would have some understanding?
Yeah, sure. It's paying attention on purpose, non-judgmentally. So it's the idea of we are choosing to bring our awareness to typically a body sensation. It clearly can be an experience of all of our senses. So it can be using our eyes, using our ears. Even mindful eating has become very much of interest to people, particularly with weight loss. You know, working with weight loss, if we pay attention to what we're eating, then perhaps we're more aware of our hunger when we're sated. So we do that purposely and non-judgmentally. And what typically happens, Joyce, and why we throw in and why it's so important to have that non-judgmental piece is because typically we will notice something and then our brain is designed to have an opinion about what we experience. And the idea is to be aware of what might travel across our mind but not get hung up in what we call the story of the thoughts going upon the thoughts. So seeing something, having an opinion about it, and then going back, well, gee, last time I saw this, I was riding in this with my parents. They were, yeah. No, we're just really just trying to notice without having the multiple layers of thoughts on top of them.
I think the key to all of that is in the now, in the moment, paying attention in the moment. We all know how we live our lives in the yesterdays and tomorrows. So being aware in the moment, I would imagine, takes a lot of focus and practice because that's not our natural inclination.
Oh, you're so right, Joyce, because our inclination and our brain, and it's all good, our brain is designed to, plan and organize. But we also need to be here in the now to take in what we're experiencing right now and to actually know what we're experiencing right now, whether it be emotions, sensations, even being aware of our thoughts in the moment. But you're right. And we're pulled, just as you said, into the future. We're pulled into the past, and we're trying, then the now just goes right by. We aren't in the now, and we look back and say, oh, what just happened? Or, gee, here I am 31 years later in my completing my education career and saying, how many moments, in the now did I actually miss?
What's fascinating about mindfulness and why so many people desperately need to focus on it and understand it and use it is the biggest problem in communication is people are not listening. They're already planning what they're going to say in response to you. I can't tell you how many billions of times I'm talking and I get cut off in the middle of a sentence and they're already on the next thing. And you have this feeling they are not with you at all, because as a coach for decades, I'm saying one of the worst things about communication is people are already jumping to the next sentence and you don't have the experience that they're listening to you.
Right. No, you said it, yes. You just explained it beautifully. There's no, there's nothing more for me to add to that piece. And also now in the age of multitasking, and our brain is, certain things were not designed to multitask. Yes, walking and talking because we use different parts of our brain. But if we're working at our computer and then a text comes in, so we might be working efficiently, so we have to stop where we're at, go look at the text that's come in. Our brain has to refocus there. And then when we go back to what we were doing on the computer or initially, there's this lag time, and we might not actually even remember what we did when we got that first distraction from the text coming in. So there's certain things we actually cannot multitask with. It's very much like, if I said, say the alphabet from A to J and we counted the number of seconds, and then I said, count from 1 to 17, and, we do that within a second or so. But when I say go A1, B2, C3, you know, we do that, it really is a whole lot longer situation because the brain has to vacillate between the two. So multitasking and with a distraction, really in organizations and companies are recognizing that it decreases productivity.
I'm going to say that the worst thing with communication, well, it has its really good and really bad aspects, but as you brought up, it's texting. I've seen people, you know, at dinner tables, and they're so busy texting, they're not paying any attention to the person sitting next to them, talking to them, not paying attention to the food. I recall being in a restaurant fairly recently at the next table, family of four, and the daughter was texting the entire time. I was stunned that the parents didn't say one word. The food came, everyone's eating, her plate sat there, literally sat there, to the time when the meal was over, the check came, and the waiter said, "Would you like me to wrap that up for you?" But what really got to me on that note, and I'm not one to judge people, I believe in live and let live, but no one at the table, not one person said, "Why don't you enjoy your meal?" Not one. I think that the families have come to give up on that phenomena, just let it be and not even talk about it, because the one that's doing the texting is addicted.
Right, and we do know that that can happen, particularly the younger the you know, the younger the child is, the potential for that, because they get a nice hit of the hormone, you know, dopamine, or the neurotransmitter dopamine, and that's the reward pleasure. And when children are in the, you know, adolescent age particularly, you know, that's what their brain is seeking, is that pleasure. And it's part of the brain development piece. So when they, every time they text or they get a new piece of information, they get another little hit of the dopamine. So over time, we know that, you know, they need more and more and more of it. So, you know, for student and children's brain development, it really, I think there's much to be said for limiting the amount of screen time, whether it be, you know, video games or whether it be your cell phone, texting, whatever it is, just in order for people to, you know, help keep the brain in its normal progression. I mean, the brain isn't fully developed, the prefrontal cortex, until 20s, a little bit later for males than for females, what the research says, but in the 20s. So we do not want to be interfering with that if we can help it. So yes, it is true, like just as you were saying, there is addiction coming up for, you know, using the screen. So, and also, you know what I found, Joyce, which has been fascinating for me working in my relationships with students as an assistant principal these last 10 years and being a student, that what screen time is also preventing is students to see the facial expressions in our species, the human. One of the beautiful things of being a Homo sapiens or a human being is that we have facial expressions that we use to read in order to understand kind of, our relationship to them, or understand kind of more societal norms, that when people are doing this over texting, we don't get to see a face-to-face interaction, which might show tears, which might show even joy, might show sadness. And in our work with children now, I believe there's a more of a trend to have there to be, you know, positive resolutions between students where they come together and resolve things. And I had that happen yesterday where a boy just said, "I did what I did. You asked me to. It wasn't right. I did it, but I didn't want to lose you as my friend." And he starts crying. And this other boy was looking at him like, wow. You know, so I do think that we've really got to look at, you know, the unique experience that we can have as human beings and not throw it to the wind by expecting to communicate only via texting with real important matters.
Wow, this is so valuable for our listeners about the significance, the importance. So what is the value of mindfulness to the brain, body, and cells?
Right. Well, so to the brain, and I'm going to kind of use the stress model as, or what happens when we get stressed. And as we go through our day, pretty much we go through our day, and we might, depending on our job, we all have a pretty much a normal, I'm going to say, set point. So imagine a line across the graph going horizontally. And then something bad or something that might stress us. So someone, you know, is upset with us in the road or in the gas line. And so we get an element of stress, so it peaks. And then hopefully over time, you know, it goes back to that normal set point. Well, what's happening, particularly with all the distractions, we keep never getting back to that baseline. So our body is continuing to, you know, produce cortisol. Our amygdala, which is the fight, flight, or freeze part of the brain, is getting flooded with emotions constantly. And what ends up happening there is that our amygdala will respond first, and we don't necessarily have time to go to the prefrontal cortex, which will give us the opportunity to pause and choose a response, unless we train ourselves that when we're stressed and when we recognize in our body or we recognize a thought in our head that we are feeling stressed, we can actually breathe, and breathing is the parachute, which can help us come back to the moment and give us an opportunity for a pause. It might only be a short pause. It might be just something we notice and we still respond in our very usual habituated way. Or it might be allowing us to just kind of self-talk and keep ourselves responding as opposed to reacting. We all have patterns that we're wired, and people with trauma, of course, have patterns, because that amygdala, that part of the brain that helps us survive, is just so used to reacting in a certain way that we are actually breaking or changing, I should say, because neuroplasticity allows us to rewire, allows us to reroute the direction that we're going. It's very much like a road. If there's a road that has got a median in the middle of it, and that road's traveled over and over again, and maybe over the median, you know, the grass won't grow. But, you know, when we start changing, you know, the direction, and we're not on the exact same path, then we allow new things to grow.
So with mindfulness, how important is it to pay attention to your breathing?
Right. So that's where the breath is the parachute for the body, because we have the chance to go from that automatic response to, when we pay attention to our breath, we're allowing the fight, flight, or freeze, which draws all our blood out to our appendages, away from our heart, away from digestion. That's why when you're nervous, you might not feel like you really want to eat. And it allows us to bring it back inside to regulate the body and allow the chemicals that are floating around to be reduced. So, and then our memory, when the amygdala isn't flooded, the hippocampus and the memory and the emotional abilities are able to be more active, I should say, at that time. So the breath allows all that. And as well, Joyce, probably the other beauty of it is, by paying attention to the breath, we're giving our mind something to focus on. And mindfulness is not about not having any thoughts. That is just changing our relationship with the thoughts so that we become the observer. So we actually become the observer of our breathing, the moving in of the belly and the moving out of the belly or the chest, or even perhaps the tips of the nostrils, because the mind will want to pay attention to something. And in times of stress, we'll be ruminating, we'll be thinking about what we should have, could have, would have done, or wishing we hadn't done that and saying, why did we do that? So this way, we give the mind something to focus on, but not those thoughts that will proliferate the feelings, the thoughts of the negative thoughts, and continue to producing those chemicals inside of our bodies. So that's
when I think of mindfulness, I think of all the things we do all day on automatic. We brush our teeth. We don't think about exactly where, how, we just do it. There are so many things we just do. So one of my biggest problems in not being in the moment, not focusing, not being mindful, as I put things down. And every day I'm looking for something that I just had somewhere. I misplace things all the time. What advice would you give me and people like me that are always misplacing things?
Right, right. Well, first of all, I would say find, if possible, a familiar place that you typically put them. But I think it just goes back to that feeling of being aware I have the keys in my hand now, and knowing when you're holding the keys and knowing when you're releasing the keys, when you're releasing your hand and placing the keys, you know, on the surface or wherever you're placing them, and just being aware of where you are at that place in time, whether it be the kitchen floor. But when we come back into our body, that helps once again to bring us with that mind-body awareness and that mind-body connection. So that keys in my hand, opening my hands and taking my keys here. So it's a very conscious effort. Anytime, Joyce, we change habits or patterns, or we want to, yes, we have to, you know, really slow things down. So that's very much coming out of automatic pilot means I'm choosing to slow things down and pay attention. So that's the very first part of mindfulness, which is a wonderful thing. And going back to brushing teeth, absolutely. When I teach mindfulness-based stress reduction, and one of the aspects of the course is, you know, we try and find a daily habit or something, one of our daily living experiences that we do, and we take the opportunity to say we're going to bring mindfulness to that. So very often people, and I too, chose brushing the teeth, and what it really felt like to have a toothbrush on our teeth was very interesting. And what is our tongue doing when we're brushing our teeth? So really the big piece that's been helped me a lot and is one of the attitudinal foundations in mindfulness-based stress reduction is curiosity. Oh, let me be curious. And that takes the judging element out of it.
The problem, you know, again, with the finding things, you say find the familiar place, which I do. That's why it's such an enigma. In the last few weeks, I had gotten a $100 gift card to a favorite store as a birthday present. I didn't think anything about it because I kept that card in the card. It came to me with all my other birthday cards. So I didn't even think about it till the day before I knew I was going to that store. And that's when I pulled out all my birthday cards, and lo and behold, every birthday card was there except the one with the gift card. I was stunned. It never even occurred to me there would be an issue. So I was mindful that I had them all together, and now it's about 3 weeks later, I still haven't found it. I went to all the familiar places. You know how when you lose something, you go to the same place 20 times because you're incredulous it's not there. So it was a major upset for me because, as I said, didn't give it a second thought till the night before. I wanted to make it ready, and every card was together except that one still hasn't turned up. Have you found people that have gone through this and found some way to refocus and not go through this? I go through this quite often.
Right, right. Well, of course. And like, you know, I mean, do we all have those moments where that happens? Absolutely. Because we're not going to be mindful every single moment. And myself too, Joyce, I will say for me, it might be to put it in a certain safe place, and then I might not remember where the safe place is. So, the best thing I can, you know, say is that when we're doing it is to be as conscientious as we can and as aware of that particular moment and do that. But there's really, but there's just so many times when I am not. So there are many times that I am, but there are many times as well where that won't happen, where I will do exactly what you said. I purposely put my keys in a pocket in my purse, but let me tell you, there's a lot of times I find my keys not in that pocket when I know I want to put it there. So it's part of our human condition, and one of my most favorite teachers would have this great phrase, and she would say, ITI, well, isn't that interesting, as a way to keep non-judgmental you know, us from being too harsh on ourselves for doing that. But I understand the stakes of a $100 gift card. And you're making me wonder. I just got a $100 gift card to the Cheesecake Factory, and I think I know where it is.
A key word there is I think.
I think I know.
I had no doubt that it wouldn't be there. That's why I didn't give it a second thought till I was ready to go to that particular restaurant, which is almost an hour away. So it really, to this day, it really bothers me. I've looked so hard for it, and other things too that never ever turned up. I've often thought maybe there are spirits here taking those things and testing me for whatever reason. I did hear of a story with one of my best friends who spent the night at one of her friends, and she said when she went to sleep, she noticed that friend had a lovely necklace around her neck, and in the morning it wasn't there. So my friend said, I saw it, I noticed it, and yet the next morning, not only wasn't it there, it was nowhere to be found anywhere in the house. Like she looked if it had dropped off, slipped off, lock broke, all those things. So sometimes I wonder when it's on that level if there's some mysterious factors coming into play.
Yes. I understand that question for sure. Yes, that's true. But there's, you know, and I think as mindfulness, you know, gets out there more and more, people want it to be a panacea for everything. And it takes work, it takes time, and it takes really a commitment. And, you know, the good news sometimes is, the good news is, well, I'm being more mindful. And that's why we have to bring in the piece of curiosity, compassion, non-judging, because the bad news is, there I go again. I am doing this exact same thing because I become more mindful of it, and it's really something I might want to change or something I'm not feeling real favorable towards, either about myself or a situation. And so that's why we say, okay, it really is step by step. It's not necessarily this big leap because, and I love this analogy, if we think with change, it's going to be a big leap, and we don't have to take the steps along the way. We can never retrace our steps. And I think it's real important that every breath that you're aware of and every opportunity that you are to kind of bring an attitude of curiosity and laugh at ourselves when we start criticizing ourselves, which in the West is a big problem. I mean, the Dalai Lama has been shocked at how judgmental we are of ourselves and self-critical over here in the West compared to the East. And, you know, he's met with, you know, teachers and strong practitioners over here because he was very confused by it initially. Like, why is this self-criticism so big over here? So we have to know that we're really step by step, we're doing the best we can and keep our intention of purposefulness with wanting the change and bringing mindfulness into our lives.
This brings to mind something I learned many, many, many years ago, and that is you can do everything wrong and it could turn out right. You could do everything right and it could turn out wrong. Those words come to mind quite a bit because I can cite so many instances in both cases. So with mindfulness, you can do everything right via that gift certificate, and it turned out wrong. I did focus. I did know, believed I know where it was, and
right.
Lo and behold, it wasn't. So,
right.
Folks, now I'm going to ask you to be very mindful right now for the next minute and a half and listen to the words, wise words of our friend Beverly Nadler of why you should be listening to this show every day. So I specifically request that you be mindful of the words and then heed it. Here's Beverly in her words.
Listen to me. I have something to say about a wonderful way to start your day, a way to stimulate your mind and increase your energy. Make you feel so good. And guess what? It's free. Weekdays at 11 a.m. Eastern, hear the Joyce, Barry, and Friends show. You'll find it on the internet, on Blog Talk Radio. This show is upbeat and fun and very inspirational. It's informative, educational, and very motivational. There's the Coach's Corner, great quotes and news. There are suggestions perspectives, and advice you can use to enhance your life and improve your health, plus clever, simple ways to increase your wealth. Joyce's perceptions and personality will keep you captivated, and her guests from many walks of life will always keep you fascinated. When Joyce and her friends speak, it's like you're in the conversation. This is part of what makes her show so unique, really a sensation. For Joyce's friends are not only the guests you're listening to, they're everyone who is tuning in. Yes, I do mean you. So refer your friends and family. They'll be so pleased to know. And let's make Joyce Barry and Friends the number one internet radio show.
And folks, we do ask that you partner up with us in having that happen. Simply go to joycebarryandfriends.com and spelled out joycebarryandfriends.com, our homepage for this show. And on the upper left where you see my picture right under it, it says follow. And just by clicking on follow, you'll know about every show, every guest, every topic. You need not miss any of them, because when you can't join us when we are live at 11 a.m. Eastern Time, you can hear any show 24/7 in our archives. You can download them. You can send out the links to your friends and family that you want to share the show with. Martha Rulo, one thing I'm very grateful for is that we have a mutual friend who shared you with me, who introduced you to me. And here he is right here, right now, our friend Peter Marks. Hi, Peter.
Hi, Joyce. Hi, Martha. I've been listening to the radio show from the inception. And my God, the information is brilliant. It's wonderful. Martha, thank you for sharing this with the world.
Well, Peter, thank you. Yes, and I am so glad that you've connected. We've been connected and connected with Joyce. And Peter, for, you know, I think you know me, that the one of the big passions I have is to help people find more ease in their lives. And it really begins with having more ease in ourselves, because life happens. And as Joyce was saying, you know, we can do things that happen to us, good, bad, right, wrong, but life just happens no matter what it is. And it's really, how can we have our relationship with what happens to us be accepting and understanding, so that we're not too harsh on ourselves and just are able to roll and flow with, as I call it, or Jon Kabat-Zinn so brilliantly outlined in his book, Wherever You Go, There You Are. It's surf the waves, you know, and because there's going to be different sized waves, and we just want to surf them all.
Well, wherever you go, there you are. I like
yes.
that. Wherever you go, there you are. Go ahead.
Right.
Yes, I also
you
want to say that, Marcy. Do you include at all in your methods tapping?
Tapping. I know that's a great, what should I say, modality. I do not do tapping, but I do know that it's very successful for people with anxiety, for sure. There's many modalities that are coming into
yes.
play now. Yes.
Absolutely.
So,
well,
folks, I just want to share with you,
go ahead,
just so
Joyce.
You know, Peter Marks is a world-renowned psychic. He is highly respected all over the world. We are privileged to have him as a regular on our show once a month, and it's very few people that I've made regulars with that come on once a month. The next time he will be on is Thursday, June 28th. Now, that's just this particular Thursday, because our regular Thursday guest, Beverly Nadler, here's to your health Thursday. Day, switch with Peter for this particular week only because of circumstances beyond her control. So to hear Peter and to have the opportunity to ask him a question, you'll get a free on-air mini reading about any question or concern. So I just wanted to share that Peter, in his infinite wisdom and the value he gets from his guides, thought to bring Martha and me together. Thank you, Peter.
Thank
you're
you,
welcome.
Peter.
You're welcome. I also wanted to mention was I'm glad you brought up the 28th of this month because I misplaced my calendar and you just reminded me.
That's funny.
Right. Well, you know, we had talked a little earlier about, you know, formal versus informal practices of, you know, mindfulness or what we can do in our life. The way it was designed was, you know, back in the 70s, it's actually been a Buddhist practice for thousands of years, but was to really use the body and the breath as a way to, you know, regulate ourselves or come back into the present moment. But informally, there have been so many ways and or other modalities, just as Peter mentioned, they're seeing the beauty and they've been around for a while, but they're coming to the forefront, like you said, with tapping. But even with students, we're using something as simple to help them calm and focus. Coloring. So mandalas have been, you know, developed. There's actually even coloring books. So just the idea of taking colors and being aware of coloring in with the lines and the sensations of the hands is another wonderful way to do with children, is a way to help them kind of calm a busy mind and bring their attention to what they're doing right there in the moment. So the field is expanding.
I want to ask you next, why is it so valuable in terms of enhancing personal well-being and resilience? Why is it so valuable?
Well, if we take a look at what we said, we all have very habituated patterns. You know, our brain, it's like the groove in the old, you know, record players, which we've done repeatedly time and time again. And some are useful and some are not so useful. So the idea is we have the opportunity to make a choice to, first of all, have the awareness that this is something I do and, oh, look, I do it in this situation and, oh, this is what it feels like in my body, and to say, you know, I don't want this to be a pattern that I continue to do. So I now, as I continue to become aware of it, because it's causing stress in my life or making me not feel successful, and so I now have the opportunity through mindfulness to say, oh, I can now begin the process of developing another groove due to the neuroplasticity ability of the brain. So that's one thing. And when we, and it also, as I said, I think the beautiful thing for me when I go back to my son's accident was that there were many opportunities I could have reacted, looked at things in a very old, habituated way, which is, you know, typically for all of us because of the way our brain's design is very negative, or to recognize that and say, well, wait a minute, do I have to necessarily think like that right now? I have a choice. I am not going to think that way. And as Peter Marks would say, it also helps, you know, to keep our vibrations high. With the brain being designed to scan and determine where there is potential danger and to have us react to that quickly. And our brain is a 5-to-1 ratio of where negativity to taking in positive, meaning we have like a 5 times greater awareness of negative versus positive. I think mindfulness provides the opportunity for us to catch the brain's natural design and rewire it. And there's so much work being done in that avenue. So that's how it really creates our resilience, so that we're not traveling down a road that is one that I believe just helps us not feel healthy and well and can erode our confidence. And I don't think that, I know for me that hasn't just been a successful avenue.
Martha, why would the brain focus 5 times more on the negative than the positive? I would think it's equal focus. Whatever you're bringing to it, it's focusing on. Why such a ratio in favor
right.
of negativity?
Right, and they call it the negative bias. Rick Hansen has done a lot of that work. He's actually just written a book called Hardwiring Happiness. Because in order for us to say, remember, we have the a brain that's about 3.5 billion years old. And what we did in order to survive is, you know, you had to determine, walk along and determine, oh, is this berry healthy for me to eat or not good for me to eat? So you're looking for things, and once you have one bad memory, it is deeply entrenched in the mind so that you won't go to that again. So it's like you've got to be aware of the tiger that's coming at you so you can react, but you also can't be naive because there might be one in the bush that's waiting to attack you. So it's this dilemma of always trying to scan our field to make sure we're safe. And as we all know in, you know, Maslow's hierarchy, that safety is the primary need for all humans. So yes, and that's been exciting news for all of us to recognize that, kind of, and as I work with parents and kids, that some of this is just a brain thing. It's not about us. It's just, I mean, us personally and who we are. It's really a characteristic of the brain. So now that we know that, it really, I believe, gives even more credence to the field of mindfulness and perhaps opens up the window that we have the opportunity now to work with that and make a difference.
And the whole thing about mindfulness, focusing on the now, I actually have an original poem that delves into that, which is, if not now, when? Joyce, Barry, and Friends, the number one worldwide internet radio show. This poem, an original by yours truly, is entitled, If Not Now, When? We are giving you the education. We are giving you the information. We are giving you the motivation. We are giving you the inspiration. What you really need to do is to put this into application. Do you want a transformation? You must use your imagination. It might take some perspiration. It's all in the preparation. You must really be sure there is no procrastination. It helps to have a fascination and very strong determination. You want a positive demonstration, achieve success in the administration. It really is the time. Give each show your consideration. What is your aspiration? What do you need for stimulation? To get healthy and off that medication, to get wealthy, it's your destination. So make today the day for your participation. If you do, congratulations. If not now, when? So, folks, when you focus on mindfulness, you can ask yourself that question, if not now, when? What do you think of that poem, Martha?
Yes, if not now, when? Right. And like, I like the idea that it talked about, you know, perspiration, because, again, it's setting that intention, like our compass, our true north, knowing we want to make a change, we don't want life to pass us by. And then doing the work that it takes to, you know, the work that it takes to do it, which you hold lightly. I mean, and we can also hold anything too tightly in our hands and make it be the destination. And, you know, the joke is like, you know, the perfect meditator. There's no such thing as a perfect meditator, because each meditation experience, each mindfulness experience will be the exact same thing. So we have to be open to what it is in the now. It's like this analogy of wearing a dress or wearing an outfit, going to a restaurant at a certain time, sitting at a certain table, certain chair, eating the exact same, eating a meal, a perfect meal, having that experience, and then expecting to go back the next day and wearing the same outfit, sitting in the same table, sitting at the same chair, ordering the same food, and, you know, it's going to be different. And sometimes we want things to be so fixed and so permanent, but life isn't about permanence. Everything is changing. I mean, you know, our cells are changing, you know, each moment, and each breath that we have is new and different. So how can we understand that we want, you know, that we very often, in order to feel safe, want everything to be the exact same, or we want to plan things out. So it does take a jostling. It's like a boat. When things aren't the way we want them to be, it takes that persistence and that perspiration to shift and to just say, okay, here we go. This is just another wave, and, you know, we'll see where this wave takes us. But, you know, I think we all get convinced, and I, you know, when we have that grit that says this wave isn't going to knock us over, though.
I love that analogy, Martha Rulo. It really drives home all the things we go through in life, and it is different. We date a person for the first time. It was the perfect date, looking forward to the next one, and it could be the total opposite experience. So that was really a very valuable analogy, where you do everything exactly the same and it's different. So that was really terrific. Getting back to if not now, when, a lot of you have the response to that, I'll get to it someday. I'll get to look into mindfulness someday. I'll get to practice it someday. So I wrote this one for those of you who actually believe there is a someday. Someday, an original poem by yours truly, Joyce Barry. I went to my calendar and took a look. I discovered that someday was not in the book. I looked carefully, for someday I did seek, but only Monday through Sunday appeared on each week. I got really confused. This was not funny. I always said someday I'd make very good money. I always said someday I'd get everything done. I always said someday I'd be number one. I always said someday this and someday that. Someday is starting to sound like very old hat. I became very sure that something was wrong. No someday on my calendar all along. I thought everything I wanted would come to be. It would happen someday, I kept telling me. It was someday, I kept telling you, that all our dreams were sure to come true. How shocking to discover that all along, someday was not in the calendar. How could I be so wrong? How could I not know that why I was stuck was that someday would never, ever show up? There wasn't a calendar anywhere, none to be found, that had someday in it. It would never come around. I always knew that if something is going to be, I am totally responsible. It's all up to me. I thought of my goals and made a new list. How exciting to realize that someday did not exist. Now I really know without any doubt that Monday through Sunday is in and someday is out. So I ask you, women, I ask you, men, I ask myself, if not right now, when? I love poetry, and I love when the poems I've written connect so well to the message of the day. Someday, I'll get to it someday, if not now, when? Very important messages. Martha, what message do you want to leave our audience with?
The message, Joyce, I want to leave with people is would be a couple of things. One, just to begin to with an attitude of curiosity about life. When we notice ourselves pegging either other people through judgments or having the attitude of this isn't going to work out and or why do things always happen to me, to perhaps step back and just notice that we're hung up in a sense of negativity when really there's an opportunity right here and now to look at what's in front of us. Not that it's not hard or easy, and I think mindfulness gives us the opportunity to what we usually, the words we use, turn towards the difficult with an understanding and a compassion, knowing that we have the courage to turn towards whatever arises. So an element of curiosity about what is this life around me and what is it like to do these simple, small tasks of brushing my teeth as a way to start not missing the moment. I think, Joyce, that can lead to a greater connection with humanity, which I think overall, I believe there are so many people wanting to recognize that we all are having this human experience together, and that I am not separate. Our thinking of negativity can very often have us think that we're isolated and we're separate, when in reality we truly are connected, but we have to open up to the presence of ourselves, and then we get to recognize that everyone else is a present and has the opportunity to live in the present.
As you were speaking those words, I brought to mind a fellow that was my best friend, like on a very high spiritual level. And when he passed, and this was decades ago, in the synagogue, it was a huge synagogue, literally wall-to-wall people, standing room only. And we're talking a big synagogue. People came from all over the country. They came in from everywhere to attend that service. My friend to this day, I think about him every single day, Michael Wyman, God bless his soul. So I'm thinking, why was he so popular? What made him different? I've never seen anything like it. When people got up to speak about him, everyone came from, he was my best friend. So as I'm thinking about mindfulness, I don't know anyone that was more in the moment than he was. When he was with you, nothing else existed. You really got the sense, as he looked into your eyes when you were talking, that you were all that existed, 100%. And I'm just thinking of his popularity and everyone feeling like he was their best friend, including me. And as I said, to this day, I think about him each and every day. So he certainly knew about mindfulness, being in the moment, really listening to you and relating to you. So I just realized, like, what made him so special? And his focus, his books, his courses were all on the power of acknowledgement. And he always made you feel that important. So the compliments were always real and genuine because he loved people so much. So, Martha, I just want you to know this was a really special show. I'm officially going on record. I want to have you back in the near future. I thoroughly enjoyed it and learned a lot from it. Is there anything else you want to say as we wrap up here?
No, I just would like to end real quickly with a poem from David White. I think this is so helpful for me. It's titled Enough. Enough. These few words are enough. If not these words, this breath, if not this breath, this sitting here, this opening to the life we have refused again and again until now. So let's all work on being in the now and with this breath and understanding that we really are beautiful people. We've got layers on top of us that we can turn towards, and we can slowly recognize our common humanity as we work to alleviating our suffering, we'll be alleviating other people's suffering.
That was really wonderful, Martha. Again, thank you. And I want to end with a special prayer I wrote for all of you. May yesterday be the last day, the very last day of your struggles, your suffering, your ill health, your misfortunes, your problems, your pain, your worries, your troubles, your trials and tribulations. May today be the first day. It is the first day of the rest of your life. May it be the beginning of the very best of your life, with extraordinary wishes granted and dreams coming true. Make this the most meaningful year of making more money, good health, good luck, good fortune, attracting special people and opportunities, creating creating magical memories and manifesting marvelous miracles. Folks, go out and make someone happy today. Go do a random act of kindness. Do pay it forward. We want to make you happy today and every day. So we invite you to sing along with us, dance along with us, and laugh along with us. And you can do that right here, right now, to the Joyce Barry Mash. Thank you. God bless you.
I was listening to Blog Talk Radio when my ears heard something that I did know. From the speakers of my laptop, I heard a voice. It was the White Oprah, also known as Joyce.
He did the mash.
The Joyce Barry Mash.
Joyce Barry Mash.
She is a coaching smash.
He did the mash.
You'll catch on in a flash.
He did the mash.
The Joyce Barry Mash. I felt so inspired by her. Now when?
He did the mash.
The Joyce Barry Mash.
Joyce Barry Mash.
She is a coaching smash.
He did the mash.
You'll catch on in a flash.
He did the mash.
The Joyce Barry Mash.
Wow.
Joyce knows all about having fun. Wow. She's a home business wizard and she's just begun.
Wow.
She's
wow.
a coaching sensation for not just me or
wow.
you or her. It's for everyone.
And you can mash.
Do the Joyce Barry Mash.
Joyce Barry Mash.
She's a home business smash.
Then you can mash.
You'll catch on in a flash.
Then you can mash.
Do the Joyce Barry Mash.
Wow.
Wow. Have a fantastic day.
Wow.
And listen to Joyce Barry and Friends.
Wow.